You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and shout.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook. But most people, probably 95% of the people who'll be watching and listening to this program are doing so over the archives. We want to keep you up to date, so if you are ever out and about, or you want to catch up on a program you might have missed, let me give you the number. So please write this number down. Our archive number is 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. We also have a Progressive Commentary archive, so you can download hundreds, if not thousands, of programs from our Progressive Commentary Hour. The Progressive Commentary number is 701-719-0999, 701-719-0999. Today, you're going to learn about eating more plant-based foods is linked to a better heart health, who says? Johns Hopkins University. Then I'm going to share the insect apocalypse on our environmental segment. The U.S. is driven by a 50 times increase in toxic pesticides and is killing the insects, including bees. Also, we're going to weigh in on a different perspective on the shooters and the shootings, and also what we're not paying attention to that we should. We should be opening up an honest, open, progressive dialogue on all of this. Also today, it is disheartening when women and men have had injured children, injured by vaccines, and then they're blamed for it, or because they become educated about it. Wouldn't you? If something injured or took the life of your loved one, you'd want to know as much as you could. Unfortunately, now they're being considered as domestic terrorists. So one of these women wrote a poem, lyrics more than a poem, and we're going to play it. Also, before a congressional hearing, just I believe last week, an ultra-liberal professor, I think he's been a professor for over 35 years, told the truth about what no one in America was paying attention to. Google was manipulating its algorithms so that Hillary Clinton would receive a minimum of 2.4 million votes in the last election, and upwards of 10 million. So that's a big game changer. And they're going to do it in the 2021 also. But also, Google is the same organization that is now censoring, along with Facebook, all controversial issue on vaccines and GMOs, on alternative cancer therapies, even things like the dangers of 5G electromagnetic frequencies. In other words, anything that challenges the status quo is now considered domestic terrorism and is being excluded. So even if you want a good article, you're not going to be able to find it. You'll be driven by Google to Wikipedia, and you'll see propaganda by the skeptics' articles. So that's our program today. We have a lot to share. We begin by the idea that eating mostly a plant-based diet, and hopefully none or very few animal-based foods, is now being linked to better heart health and a lower risk of dying from a heart attack or a stroke or other cardiovascular disease. That's according to new research published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, the open access Journal of the American Heart Association, and also stroke. So that's important. Keep on a good, healthy vegetarian diet. From Oxford University in Great Britain, supplementing with B vitamins, B1, B2, B6, folic acid, niacin, B12, can reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease. That's good. I would suggest 25 to 50 milligrams for a more functional utilization inside the body. It's able to slow down the progression of the neurodegenerative disease and improve cognitive function. And the clinical trial involved 156 older people with mild cognitive impairment. And so the university divided them up into two groups, a control group that got a placebo and another group that got folic acid and of 20 milligrams B6 and 500 micrograms B12. I would have given double that amount, but still it lasted 2 years and it made a big difference. That's good. A lot of you like chocolate, and healthy chocolate's really good for you. But how good? To find out, University of Perugia, which is in Italy, did a study, and they found that chocolate consumption reduced cardiovascular risk. And that was a systemic review and meta-analysis where they looked at a lot of studies in the scientific literature to assess the relationship between chocolate intake and cardiovascular risk. And it made a big difference. Those who ate the chocolate had better cardiovascular outcomes, less stroke, less acute myocardial infarction, less heart failure, less coronary heart disease. So that's good. And if you have a 70% chocolate, that's excellent. So there were 16 different studies they analyzed for that. From a study done on the effects of BPA, that's biphenyl A, during pregnancy and childhood, and what they found is it really exposes the child to changing circadian rhythms and creating hyperactivity. So a lot of what we call ADD and ADHD may be that the mother was exposed to BPA. It's everywhere. It's in so many containers and plastic. And think how many people have used plastic in heating something up in a microwave. Not a good idea. So get rid of the BPA. One more reason to have a clean home. University of Calgary, and a glance at exposure to the biphenyl A during pregnancy can lead to changes in the offspring's circadian rhythms, and that leads to hyperactivity throughout a person's life. That's not good. So, again, the better your home is as far as free of all these plastic containers and cans in your homes, that's what causes the problem. And this appears in the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences publications. By the way, it also causes cancer and birth defects. And if you don't have enough vitamin D, it's linked to non-motor symptoms in patients with Parkinson's disease. This is from Soochow University in China. You need vitamin D3. And this was in the Neurologica and Scandinavia Journal, which is about neuro diseases, including Parkinson's. And it can also lead to depression and anxiety problems if you lack vitamin D. So make sure you're getting your vitamin D. Also, a new study sheds light on a novel exercise treatment for common forms of cardiovascular disease. And this is from University of New South Wales. Weight training, or so-called resistance training, can help people with peripheral artery disease reduce painful symptoms like muscle cramps during walking and exercising. And this was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. So, what we've been advocating for decades, cardiovascular, the cardio is to get out there and power walk, swim, or bike, or jog. And the vascular also is being able to lift weights, do push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, resistance exercises, and that's easy. It can also help your heart. I've been asked several times, Do almonds really lower your risk of cardiovascular disease? Well, Tufts University has just answered that. A review published in Advances in Nutrition finds evidence to support almonds are good for your heart, but most people don't eat enough of them. Just have a handful of almonds each day. They are loaded with mono and polyunsaturated fats, which have been shown to lower your cholesterol. Moreover, they contain other potentially heart-healthy components, such as quality fiber, vitamin E, selenium, magnesium, copper, potassium, and omega-3 fatty acids. All good for you. So the evidence is in. Just a couple ounces, maybe 1.5 ounces of almonds a day can reduce your risk of heart disease. And that is important. Tasty, easy, natural. And this was published in the American Society of Nutrition. And also I'll do maybe a couple more. Thousands of people could have their lives saved each year if they consume lime juice. That's according to Green Med Info. While billions of dollars are poured into research and development for pharmaceutical drugs, the humble lime has been proven to mitigate and even cure diseases that cause millions to suffer and hundreds of thousands die worldwide. The lime is best known for its role in key lime pie and margaritas. But did you know that it possesses remarkable healing capacities as well? And so have an ounce of lime juice each day. Now you can get it bottled. Now, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to give you the latest on environmental issues, and then we're going to go to some other issues. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York. Please stay with us. From our environmental report today, there's an insect apocalypse in the United States, and it's driven by a 50 times increase in toxic pesticides. Bumblebees, butterflies, and other insects are under attack by the very plants they feed on as U.S. agriculture continues to use known chemicals that kill them. This is from National Geographic. So what are we saying? We're saying that America's agricultural landscape is now 48 times more toxic to honeybees and likely other insects than it was 25 years ago. And according to National Geographic, this is because the neonicotinoid pesticides. And this was published in the journal PLOS ONE. Now, I'm a beekeeper. I've been raising bees for my entire adult life. They're great pollinators. I've never been stung, by the way, not once. And they pollinate, and also birds carry seeds, and they drop their seeds. They pollinate. Bats pollinate. And yet we're killing these because we are not having a quality environmental protection agency that says no to these. We learn nothing, evidently, from Silent Spring and Rachel Carson's great landmark work when she showed that DDT was causing bird eggs to have no shells, so they were dying, the bald eagle in particular. And it took her a long time, but we fought with her, and in 1972 we were able to ban DDT. Do you know that even though it was banned 50 years ago, it's still showing up in the soil today? And always the government, including the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, it is staying on the side of the manufacturers. Plus the people in the White House point the policymakers. They make sure that none of these pesticides are taken out, and they should be, because they're all toxic. And that's what happens when you have industrial farming, and instead of doing it the right way with organic, sustainable farming, like the Rudolf Steiner method. And many of you are doing farming also. You're not using pesticides. If you have a problem, you'll use garlic mixed with cayenne, and you spray that with apple cider vinegar on the soil, and it rids you of a wide variety of pests that would destroy your produce. So that's important. Also, we should start a movement in the United States just to allow people an opportunity to know how bad the environment is, that it's collapsing and it's getting worse. And we should get on this immediately. We should start showing things such as planting trees that they're doing around the world in other countries, and we're not doing it. So we're in our hubris, and that's a bad place to be. I want to share some different points of view about the mass shootings, and I want to try to keep it in perspective. It's always horrifying when you see that someone, whatever their philosophy, whatever their ideology, whatever their emotional derangement is, that they go out and shoot innocent people. And it happens way too often. Now, the first knee-jerk reaction is ban the assault weapons. I don't believe we should have assault weapons in any case. But there are other things causing problems. And I don't believe we've had a conversation on that. I just want to share a few things with you. Over 90% of school shootings have been linked to psychiatric medications with dangerous side effects that include violent behavior and suicidal and homicidal thoughts. A peer-reviewed study drawn from reports to the Food and Drug Administration's adverse event reporting system concluded that acts of violence towards others are a genuine and serious adverse drug event. Their words, not mine. The violent cases reviewed included 387 reports of homicide, 404 physical assaults, 896 homicide ideation reports, and 223 cases described as violence-related symptoms. Now, what's causing it? Antidepressants were the drugs most strongly and consistently implicated. In addition, there are others who have established these patterns. For example, the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, has listed more than 4,800 news stories, mainly criminal in nature, that have appeared in the media or as part of the FDA testimony in which antidepressants are mentioned. Were the people causing these problems before? No. They started happening after they were on the antidepressants, like Zoloft and Effexor and Prozac and Paxil. In fact, there's a subcategory listing school shootings linked to psychiatric drug use. Yet have you seen this once in any of the media? No, you have not. So according to a Dr. Healy, there are probably between 1,000 to 1,500 extra suicides in the United States each year triggered by antidepressants, another 1,000 to 1,500 extra episodes of violence that would not have happened without antidepressant input. And some of these include school and other mass shootings, which were unheard of 25 years ago before the introduction of the SSRIs. In fact, I remember out in Utah, I filmed a typical Mormon family, nonviolent, peaceful, religious, and the young man, the son, said that he woke up one day and he was in prison and he didn't understand how he got there. And his father said that the day before he'd walked into the class with a rifle and was going to shoot people. Now, it took a lot of effort to get him out of jail because they just couldn't wrap their minds around the idea that he had been taking an antidepressant because of breaking up with his girlfriend. A lot of people have breakups, and a lot of people get depressed for it. That's a natural expression of loss of a commitment in a relationship. And it was only after an enormous amount of evidence had been presented that the court finally allowed him out. I interviewed a woman whose son, very good student academically and also the quarterback on the football team of her high school, again broke up with his girlfriend, and she suggested, because he's a little depressed, see a psychologist. The psychologist recommended some antidepressants. The medical doctor gave the antidepressants. 2 weeks later, she came home and her son had hung himself, killed himself upstairs. This is all too common. The FDA has issued public health warnings about the volatile side effects associated with psychiatric drugs, and they are clearly disclosed by the pharmaceutical companies that manufacture them. When it comes to violent and suicidal side effects, the SSRI antidepressants dominate the list. The fatal five, including Pristiq, Effexor, Luvox, Paxil, and Prozac, the last of which came in at number 2, causing violent reactions, those ingesting it at a frequency almost 1,000% higher than the average pharmaceutical drug. Also, there's an FDA-issued black box warning indicating these dangerous side effects may be intensified in those under the age of 25. Have you noticed how many of these shooters are young? But we identify them either as white supremacists or Islamic. So therefore, we're saying, well, they had input from religious fundamentalists, they were propagandized by hate groups on the internet, and it was the social background they came from that did not honor the sanctity of life or the other. And all that certainly may be a part of this. But we have always had guns, and we have always had differences in how we view life. Where I grew up, there was only one high school. Well, there was two, but one major one, Parkersburg High School. I think they had 5,000 students. Everyone knew everyone. There was not a single shooting. In my growing up, my brother's growing up, who was 5 years older than me, and my father and mother's growing up, there was no suicides either. So that is just a microcosm then to compare. So what's changed? Well, the exposure to violent videos, the exposure to accepting things like the type of PlayStations where you have extraordinary violence, where people are playing a video game. How about how people speak with each other, the quality of the parenting? We're not having that discussion, and we should, because we shouldn't have these acts. Then look at other countries that don't have these occurrences. What are they doing? Why is it Norway is closing down prisons because they don't have enough people to put in them? And when they do, they give them the key. There's no armed guards. They can go out and visit their families. They respect each other. They have to attend classes. So that their idea is these people are ultimately going to come back into society. Shouldn't they come back in as more moral citizens and understand their responsibility for their previous crimes so they don't commit them again? They have a very low recidivism rate versus the United States. So we have overly militarized our police, and especially if you're a person of color, you've been targeted. And yet when you look at the small number of events involving people within the African-American and Latino communities towards those who have identified them as somehow justifiable targets for search and seizure and asset forfeiture and arrests and shootings, getting longer prison sentences than a Caucasian, there is certainly a strong element of racism involved in this as well. So you see, we have to have a larger conversation, and right at the center of that conversation should be what happens when you put people on psychiatric medications where the side effect is violence, including the loss of any emotional empathy for a person, where you can just walk up and shoot someone in the head. Why has that not been reported even once? And that's a problem. And also, what about all the soldiers? Unlike most people, I've produced 3 award-winning documentaries on American veterans. And my last one was American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed. When I went into the woods near Titusville to interview them, and there were about 16,000 scattered throughout that area, this one camp I went in had about 40 or 50 people in it. and they had no running water, they had no toilets, they had no electricity, and they would sit all day, and they were depressed, and they had no money. They would walk about 2 hours each way to get a free meal at a place that was doing great humanitarian work, and still is, and I believe should be supported, called the Daily Bread. And also they could take a shower there. When I asked, what is the biggest concern you have? And they said, we have become invisible. Nobody cares about us. As a result, there's high levels of suicide. But none of that is put into any statistics. The suicide of vets, almost all were on medications. And then they mix those pills together into cocktails, the antidepressant with an antipsychotic to prevent nightmares, plus an anti-epileptic to reduce headaches, in addition to pain and tranquilizers drugs. You start putting all those together, and you're going to end up with a completely altered perception of reality. Between 2000 and 2009, the military spent $1.1 billion on psychiatric and pain drugs alone. In the military, Seroquel and Risperdal are most common as the prescribed antipsychotic drugs. And look at the side effects. These people could commit crimes. And in fact, all the evidence from the research I did shows that they will frequently kill themselves. Now, imagine this. There are more than a minimum of 6,000 veteran suicides each year, and it's growing. That means that from back in 1991 and the Iraq invasion, where the soldiers were exposed to biological and chemical warfare agents, where they were given experimental vaccines, we've had about 20 to 22 vets a day every 24 hours kill themselves. Any demonstrations? Any outcries? Any sense that these people could have been helped and weren't? And the help of giving them a pill whose side effect is kill yourself? That's not on anyone's radar as something worthy of talking about? Well, do the numbers. That means that American veterans, to the number between 140,000 to 160,000, have killed themselves. That's more than died in the Vietnam War. That's more than died in the First World War. American casualties. That's a lot of people to kill themselves, and yet no discussions, no debates, no media attention. And most were on psychiatric drugs also. So we're not looking at any of this, and we should. In fact, in 2016, the suicide rate was 150% greater for veterans than for non-veteran adults, after adjusting for age and gender. And in 2016, 69.4% of veteran suicides resulted from a firearm injury. So they're killing themselves, yet they're not important. And also the politicians jump on this, and then they weaponize the arguments. Guns, no guns, blaming the president. Well, remember, we had more people die when Obama was in office from guns than thus far with Trump. No one blamed Obama. So I'm not a supporter of President Trump, if anyone hears the show knows. But I don't like people taking the wrong approach to solve a problem that should impact all of us. All right, that's important. The incarceration rate for veterans is also high, and compared to non-veterans. And a greater percentage of veterans, 64%, were sentenced for violent offenses. And a lot of that violence stems from, you guessed it, from taking medications. Each year, nearly 900,000 Americans die prematurely from the five leading causes of death. Yet, 20 to 40% of deaths from each cause could be prevented, according to a study from the Centers for Disease Control, and their figures are conservative. The study suggests that if all states had the lowest death rate observed for each cause, it would be possible to prevent. 34% of deaths from heart disease, that's prolonging 92,000 lives. 21% from cancer, that's prolonging 84,000 lives. 39% from chronic lower respiratory disease. That's prolonging or saving 29,000 lives. 33% from stroke. That's 17,000 lives. Modifying risk factors are largely responsible for leading the causes of death. And yet, we know the solution, and we know the cause, and nothing is being done about it. Nothing. We're not stopping heart disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, poor diet, overweight, lack of physical activity, stress. And yet, all this could be changed if we chose to make preventing people's death a priority. You see no demonstrations, no marches. You see no politician out there with a bully pulpit saying, 900,000 people die. We could save over 40% of them if we did the following, like put a national preventative health program together, not controlled by Big Pharma. Americans spend about 95% of their food dollars on processed foods, most of which contain one or more of the three ingredients that promote the most chronic disease, GMO corn, soy, and sugar beets. These three processed food ingredients, all of which are heavily subsidized by the U.S. government, promote obesity, diabetes, heart disease, stroke, and cancer, which means the federal government is actually promoting the very type of foods that cause the disease for which people either don't have insurance, because we don't have universal health insurance, or could have been prevented all along. I just want you to know that when I see a death, when I see someone shooting, you can have some politicized and idealized people who are ideologues to a belief system. It may be religious fundamentalism. It may be a cult. It might be white supremacists. They could be mimicking what ISIS does. You wonder, how could a person cut someone's head off? And yet thousands upon thousands of them believe they have the right to do that. Well, are we immune from having the manipulation of the media and different parts of the media to control the outcome of people's behavior? We've been propagandized and manipulated for the last 100 years. Edward Bernays, the father of American propaganda, led the way. And now you have the New York Times promoting 5G. You have the New York Times challenging anyone who doesn't vaccinate. The Washington Post wants people arrested and put in prison if you don't vaccinate. And now they're weaponizing the debate all because of measles. Measles is an infection. It's not a disease. In 19 years, two people died from measles. Over 420 died from the vaccine. That's the CDC's own statistics, and yet they make it seem like the vaccine is the only way to protect yourself. No, natural immunity is. So we say that we want science-based medicine, yet we don't use it. We don't use real science. So I wanted to share those things with you. And in fact, this is something that I just got from the Alliance for Natural Health, a highly respected publication. Let me just read this to you. It says, mass shootings likely linked to psychiatric meds. Recently, famed constitutional attorney Jonathan Emord called on the Trump administration to investigate the possible links between psychiatric drugs and violent gun attacks in the United States. The FDA is aware that these drugs can cause violent behavior, yet continues to allow powerful, mind-altering drugs to be given to millions of Americans, including children. And he goes on to talk about all the different people. For example, recently in Las Vegas, the shooter was Stephen Paddock. He killed 58 people and wounded hundreds of others. The autopsy showed he was using an anti-anxiety drug. Adam Lanza, the killer involved in the 2013 Sandy Hook school shooting, was suspected to have been on or recently stopped taking antipsychotic drugs. And those are just a couple of them. We have actually documented over 90% of all shooters in the last 30 years have been on antidepressive or antipsychotic medication, and that's one of the side effects. But it's a big industry. How much are they making? Well, if you look at antidepressants, it's $14.5 billion a year, and if you look at antipsychotics, $11 billion a year. So you're looking at $25 billion a year. Do you think they're going to give that up? No way. Do you think they had the power to tell people in the media, pull back on saying that the shooter was on psychiatric meds? Yeah. And even in families, you start taking an antidepressant or antipsychotic drug, you can end up going off the deep end and causing abuse, emotional outbursts, unstable emotional behavior. Just some thoughts for you. We're going to now go to a woman who had a child, and the child was lovely and beautiful and normal, as most children are, and then the vaccines came. Listen to her story, and she does it in a lyrical fashion.
As a mother of a vaccine-injured child, the hardest comment to hear from people is when they say over and over again, "Don't listen to them. They're just a bunch of crazy mothers." I am a mother. I am the one who knows the rhythm of my child's heartbeat. I am the one who gave life to this baby, no easy feat. I am that baby's first food, first sustenance in every sense of the word, emotionally, physically, spiritually, whether the first or the third. I have what it needs to survive and thrive. And now that they've grown a little, as a mother, I know when they need to eat or poop or get a big hug. I know when they are hiding. I know if they are lying. I know who hit who first without even trying. I know how they like to sleep, one bundled up, one without covers, and one somewhere in between. I know all of their dreams. I know their fears, their hopes. I know their wins and their losses. I know which one loves to brush her teeth and flosses every day so she won't get a cavity. I know how he won't eat it unless it's exactly right, so I'll make three meals just to avoid a fight. I know how to keep them safe, how to read the emotion on their little face, how one needs a nap while the other needs some space. I know how to juggle their feelings and toys and somehow keep it together with all that noise. And most importantly, I know what happened to my little boy. I know he had his shots one day at 6 months, the DTaP rotavirus HIB, and then fell into a deep sleep as I lay him in his crib, a sleep that instantly made me uneasy. When he awoke, he just screamed. He screamed for weeks and arched his back, but the nurses said it wasn't because of the DTaP. They said he just needed to poop because he hadn't in a couple of days. And so I prayed. And when he did finally go, it was green and slimy, so acidic it burned, and my mind was turning. I thought the Rotavax was supposed to prevent just that, diarrhea. For months it stayed that way. It seemed like his tummy got worse with each passing day. Every time I held him, I could feel the volcano that had replaced his stomach. But the doctor just said it was because he liked hummus and veggies. And then the ear infections began over and over, singles and doubles. But he'd received the HIB, which was supposed to prevent this. Still, the infections continued until I relented and he was put under to have tubes put in his tiny ears. My happy boy was no more. He was fussy and hurting, always in tears. I had no place to turn. I trudged on and realized I had so much to learn. He developed food allergies, another vaccine side effect. To gluten and dairy, to soy and to citrus, to everything it seemed except for my kisses, which I smothered him in to try and help him feel better. And then around 12 months, my nightmares came true as I watched the fog roll in. It tried to take my boy too. I could see it in his face. He stopped smiling, he stopped waving, he stopped taking up space. He would stand by the window and not respond to his name. I knew then and there what was happening and began my crusade to bring my boy back, to fix my mistake. So imagine what happens when a mother realizes her child's injury is because of her. And a decision she made without researching to see if it was really as safe as they say, it drives you to the brink. And then you come back. And you think, what can I do? How can I fix this? I buried my pain. It wasn't important. Our lives have been changed. It's time to move forward. And the research began. Studies published, books read. I reached out to doctors who scoffed and shook heads. But the new doctors and parents who embraced us with degrees, knowledge, and motives we can trust, who knew what we'd been dealing with, what was our truth. We weren't making this up. And there are things you can do to help your child recover from you. So we focused on that, what we knew. The biggest thing was, as always, the food. We changed our whole diet and lifestyle too. I wanted to heal him, not just get him through. So more research, more books, supplements, 2 probiotics and enzymes as he turned 2. He was getting better, but still verbally delayed. And I will never forget that beautiful day when I knew this regimen was working because he looked at me and sang. His ABCs, out of the blue. He had never uttered a part of that song before. My heart skipped a beat as my jaw hit the floor. I felt hope that day and gratitude in so many ways for the amazing doctors and authors and friends who had kept us sane. The chiropractor, the diet, boosting his immune system, eliminating the toxins that can constantly surround him. It was all helping. Pieces of the puzzle were coming together. The fog that rolled in lifted and we saw better weather. Turns out there's a gene, a genetic mutation, that actually impairs your body's methylation. So kids who have this MTHFR or another variant, there's at least 50 so far, have a hard time removing the toxics within the vaccines. And there are plenty. We can go down the list, but there's almost too many. Fetal calf serum is a personal fave. Monkey kidney cells and aluminum phosphate. Now, aluminum is dangerous, or so says the FDA. No more than 25 micrograms a day. But in a shot, it's okay, which is good since a single vaccine can contain up to 800 micrograms. Insane. And what heavy metal have they started to say causes Alzheimer's? I'll give you a hint. It starts with an A. Then there's the formaldehyde, the egg protein, and of course aborted fetal cells. They do try to filter the dead baby stuff out, which is why it's listed as an excipient, no doubt. But the study that found injected DNA can still become biologically active and mutate? I won't get into that here, but let's just say we have no freaking clue if that's even remotely safe. There aren't enough studies, period. But why? I mean, we're talking about our children. You think they'd at least try to make sure that the adjuvants, excipients, preservatives, and of course the virus, dead or alive, will not harm as they stand there and inject it into his arm. Where's the 50-year longitudinal study of vax versus unvax? Why hasn't that happened? If the science is settled, then where is the data? Unavoidably unsafe. Or at least that's what our Supreme Court states, which makes sense when you look at the loads of vaccine injury cases and the amount of money that's been paid to keep families complacent. It's an astounding amount of money each year. A couple hundred million, just so we're clear, and that's just the families that made it to court. So many others don't know they can report it. Doctors say the reactions are normal. Chalk it up to coincidence and never record it. Parents get lost in the shuffle, don't know who to believe, and then begin the journey of trying to grieve for their kid who regressed. They start digging through the mess and trying to find a lawyer with time and energy spent whilst dealing with a sick kid or one that's now dead. That's why the CDC itself estimates only 1 to 10% of problems end up in their database. Go look up the numbers. The website's called VAERS. Do the math and then tell me reactions are rare. Now, there is another topic at hand, and this is the stuff that I really can't stand. People that call us crazy, they don't stop there. Mothers don't know how to read a study. They should shut up and go worry about their hair. Us crazy mothers are from all walks of life, including medical professionals. We've endured ridicule and strife, families ripped apart, friends lost, speaking out against big pharma comes at a high cost, and still we soldier on because we hope that one day this madness will end and our kids will be safe, safe from the now 50 injections the CDC mandates. I've scoured hundreds of studies at this point in time, and so far none of them have given me peace of mind. There isn't a safety study that takes all ingredients combined and injects it into a primate group of some kind whilst having a placebo control group and watching them for signs of neurological, physical, and developmental demise, and then follows them for years, since it can take a long time for the damage to appear and for people to realize that the autoimmune disorders, allergies, and diseases of the mind all come back to this one thing we refer to as causal ties. No study like that exists. The best the CDC can do is hand me a list of just some of the life-changing reactions that can occur and tell me not to worry, don't look any further. Definitely don't confer with the millions of parents who are fighting to be heard. I've come across this so many times. I can't ignore it anymore. I'm drawing the line. When trying to provide some proof of our experience. Hey, guys, wait. Look what I just read. It's making me irate. No, no, little girl. You don't know how to read. Go back to where you came from and continue to breed. Don't question about your babies. Leave that to us. We know the science. In God's name, you trust. All of our crazy mother stories are different and yet the same, because every single one of them contain a feeling of dread. A vaccine, a reaction, and the realization you just made your bed. Now you have to lie in it. But I'm not gonna end this one on a bad note. Because if nothing else, take this from what I wrote. Mothers are strong and capable and resilient. We are strong enough to admit our mistake and even stronger still to forgive ourselves, though that may take a while. We are capable of thorough research in order to help our children get better, and so many of them do. And we are resilient because we must be. Our children are officially the sickest generation. Sickness. What do people do when they get sick?
Okay. You can really feel empathy for that woman and all other men and women who've suffered the slings and arrows of rejection and condescension, being talked down to by their physicians. I wished every pediatrician in America watched this. They won't. They're paid to do vaccines. It's a big profit to their company. So we'll continue to share these videos. We're going out of a program today by committee hearing, where you're going to hear Senator Ted Cruz questioning a ultra-liberal professor who is the only one that we're aware of in the United States who's done this detailed work of exposing Google for pushing votes towards Hillary Clinton in the presidential election. They're not supposed to do that. And they did it. And he exposed it. I want you to watch and listen to this exchange.
And nor are you a conservative. Is that accurate?
That would be an understatement.
And indeed, you're the former editor-in-chief of Psychology Today.
Correct.
So you're a respected academic. You testified before this committee that Google's manipulation of votes gave at least 2.6 million additional votes to Hillary Clinton in the year 2016. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I want to make sure I understand. You personally supported and voted for Hillary Clinton.
I was a very strong public supporter of Hillary Clinton, yes.
So you're not dismayed that people voted for her, but your testimony is that Google is, through bias in search results, manipulating voters in a way they're not aware of.
On a massive scale. And what I'm saying is that I believe in democracy. I believe in the free and fair election more than I have any kind of allegiance to a candidate or a party.
And looking forward, if I understood your testimony correctly, you said in subsequent elections, Google and Facebook and Twitter and big tech manipulation could manipulate as many as 15 million votes in a subsequent election?
In 2020, if all these companies are supporting the same candidate, there are 15 million votes on the line that can be shifted without people's knowledge and without leaving a paper trail for authorities to trace.
Now you described the Go Vote reminder, and you said it wasn't a public service announcement, but rather manipulation. Can you explain how? I'm not sure everyone followed the details of that.
Well, sure. If on Election Day in 2016, if Mark Zuckerberg, for example, had chosen to send out a Go Vote reminder, say, just to Democrats, and no one would have known if he had done this, that would have given that day an additional at least 450,000 votes to Democrats. And we know this without doubt because of Facebook's own published data, because they did an experiment that they didn't tell anyone about during the 2010 election. They published it in 2012. It had 60 million Facebook users involved. They sent out a Go Vote reminder, and they got something like 360,000 more people to get off their sofas and go vote who otherwise would have stayed home. The point is, I don't think that Mr. Zuckerberg sent out that reminder in 2016. I think he was overconfident. I think Google was overconfident, that all these companies were. I don't think he sent that out without monitoring systems in place. We'll never know what these companies are doing. But the point is, in 2018, I'm sure they were more aggressive. We have lots of data to support that. And in 2020, you can bet that all of these companies are going to go all out. And the methods that they're using are invisible. They're subliminal. They're more powerful than most any effects I've ever seen in the behavioral sciences, and I've been in the behavioral sciences for almost 40 years.
You know, our Democratic colleagues on this committee often talk about what they view as the pernicious effect of big money and big corporate dollars. What you are testifying to is that a handful of Silicon Valley billionaires and giant corporations are able to spend millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, collectively, massively influencing the results of elections. And there's no accountability. You said, we don't know. We have no way of knowing if Google or Facebook or Twitter sends it to Democrats or Republicans, or how they bias it, because it's a black box with no transparency or accountability whatsoever. I mean, am I understanding you correctly?
Senator, with respect, I must correct you.
Please.
If Mark Zuckerberg chooses to send out a go vote reminder just to Democrats on Election Day, that doesn't cost him a dime.
Fair enough. Do you happen to know who the Hillary Clinton campaign's number one financial supporter was in the year 2016?
I think I do, but please remind me.
The number one financial supporter of the Hillary Clinton campaign in the 2016 election was the parent company of Google, Alphabet, who was our first witness. They were her number one financial donor, and your testimony is through their deceptive...
So through deceptive promotion and algorithm manipulation, Google has become the most powerful force on Earth. It controls everything on the Internet, up to 90%. So now they're against freedom of choice. They're against the organic movement. They're against complementary and alternative medicine. They're against chiropractors. They're against homeopaths. They're against nutritionists like myself and others. They're for big pharma. They're for the big banks. They're for the military-industrial complex. They're for big agriculture. They're for GMOs. And they have the power to manipulate minds. Articles that we write, articles that you should be downloading and sending to your legislators, letters we have written to our legislators for congressional investigations, you should be going to PRN.fm, taking those and sending them to every legislator. You should be sending our articles to everyone, because they're not allowing any articles from any of the progressive sources to get to the people. It's as if you wrote an article and nobody read it, because nobody knows where to search from it, because Google is censoring it, Facebook is censoring, and Wikipedia is demonizing it. Now do you see that congressional testimony? That's how deep the deep state is into our minds and our body politic. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for watching, and have a nice day. Like this.